you. 1 Kings 17. We'll go another step in our study on the old prophet Elijah. Verse number 6 again. And the ravens brought him bread and flesh. Bread and meat. In the morning, and bread and flesh in the evening. And he drank from the brook. Pretty good supply, isn't it? Pretty good supply. Bread and flesh, two meals a day, with at this time plenty of water to drink. God's good to his promises, isn't he? He's good to his promises. He told Elijah, you go to where I show you, to a brook, to a place that I show you, there's a brook there. And I'll feed you. I'll send the ravens to take care of you. Two meals a day. And you stay there until the brook dries up. He didn't tell him how long it was going to be. He just said, you stay until I'll show you and tell you what to do hereafter. That was God's instructions to him. That's what he had revealed to the old prophet. So Elijah, fed by ravens. That's amazing, isn't it? Prophet fed by ravens. I've got an abundant supply of ravens, crows, around that place over there where we live. We've got some heavy pines all around the place, and we've got two pair of these red tip tail. Golden-breasted hawks. They're there every year. They've been there since we've been there. And they'll raise off a couple of their settings, and I watch them grow up. But I think what attracts them is that cover they have there with all those pines and the hardwoods behind us. But the crows are just plentiful, and I've been sitting out real early in the morning. The crows start getting up and making that noise. Been doing it around your Georgia time, around 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock Alabama time. And they've been moving a little bit quicker now since the time. The day's shortening up, so I've been watching that also. But it seems like they got a clock built in. They know when it's time to start crying. And what they do is cry for food. When you hear a raven crying, he's calling to God for his food. You read that in the scriptures. God feeds them. Feeds the sparrows, feeds the ravens, feeds all of his creatures. And they look to him for their food every day. Every day. They don't know where they're going to find it, but God directs them. He'll direct them. Those old ravens, of course, are scavengers. They clean up the roads for us. Those and the old turkey buzzards, they'll clean up the possums, and over there we got a lot of those armadillos, and it's always good to see one of them dead on the road, because if they don't, if somebody don't kill them, and I think they're attracted to automobiles. You'll find them, and usually the last thing they're doing is praying. They'll be on their backs with their hands, their feet straight up. But it won't be long, and the old buzzards and the ravens will start picking and cleaning that shell out. There won't be nothing left but a shell when they get through with it. But they clean it up, and the Lord does that. Those birds have to have something to eat, so the Lord tells this old armadillo, and get ready. There's a car coming down the road. Get ready. Now get out there in front of the car. And that armadillo goes out there, and he gets bumped off, and so he's feeding his birds the next morning. They get breakfast. And it's so unusual that one of those crows would give up a meal. So unusual. It's just against their nature, isn't it? Well, that's what we're looking at here. Elijah fed by ravens. You know, the God of nature, what we see here, first of all, is the God of nature ministering to his lonely prophet, the lonely man, Elijah. He's in a secluded place, in a cave, no one else around, no one else to talk with. It's he and God, and what a state to be in. Just him and the Lord. And he remained there for about a year, you know, in that particular state. But you know how God makes the lowest things in nature serve his purpose and his people. Here's a good lesson here. I mean, he makes the lowest thing in nature, the lowest creatures. Most folks don't have a bit of use for crows. They don't. These old ravens. They don't. Used to have a fellow in a church, and he loved to kill ravens. Now, I went with him one time, but I said, no, I don't get a whole lot of fun out of that. You know, because you can't eat them. And there again, you know, the Lord says, whatever you kill of my lower creatures, eat it. If they can't eat it, don't kill it. Well, God's got a purpose for every little creature. Whatever that creature is, God has a... We don't understand it, do we? Sometimes it just bomb-fuzzles us. What's the use of this right here? Well, God has a use for it. In some way or another, it's serving his people. We may not realize it, but it's serving his people. You know, we despise those ants, don't we? They sting you. They get on these babies and they'll sting them real bad. And they come squalling to us about it. We despise those things. But there's a purpose even for those ants. I studied those things one time, and the colonies, how that they, I mean, they just burr under the ground. And actually, they're aerators. They let moisture into the earth through all their burrowing, their digging, their colonies. And it's amazing. I preached a message one time out of the Proverbs on those little, there was the ant and the coney. Y'all, some of you remember that message I preached? About five creatures. The little lizard, you know, the spider, it's called. But it's a lizard. It makes its habitation in kings' palaces back in the Holy Land. That's where they'd find them most of the time. And they couldn't get to them. The palace ceilings were normally very high, very stately ceilings, probably some of them 20 feet high. And the servants couldn't get to those little fellas. They'd be clinging to the ceiling. Well, there's a message in every one of those things. And I was able to get a little light and put that thing together. I think we still may have a copy of it in here somewhere. But all these little creatures, God has a purpose for them. And his purpose is for them to serve us and to glorify his name. Serve his purpose. And Pastor, you saying that irrational creatures are divinely directed by God? I certainly am. Yep, that's what I'm saying. Divinely directed. God Almighty directs them. I'm talking about every... We don't understand it. We won't understand it until by and by when we get there. I think that's going to be one of the glorious things about eternity. I believe we're going to get a panoramic view of everything. How that God in his eternal purpose had us picked out, we who believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, has all picked out and selected. And our life was all fixed. Everything was fixed in our lives. We don't like some things that took place back here. But I'm for one that, and though I had a, you know, sometimes I say I regret this and regret that and regret the other. But, you know, I don't know where it'd be wise to change anything back there, now. Because it was all purposed and planned out for God to eventually bring us to him, to himself. Yeah, I believe that he certainly, as we see here with these ravens, he directs the movements every day of his lower creation. He has a purpose in it. You see, all creatures from the lowest to the greatest under God's divine rule. They obey him. Matter of fact, the creatures, lower creation, they don't, you know, they're irrational creatures. They do what they're doing, not knowing why they're doing it, but they're doing it. As God directs them, God moves them. And they're really much more obedient than you and I. When you get down and look at it, they whatever God directs them to do, they do. They go. They don't even ask questions about it. They just do it. And we're not quite that way, are we? Now, we always wonder, well, why this? Or why that, you know? And a lot of times, you know, I have to confess, too, we're bad about questioning God and questioning what he did this for and why he did that. But then sometimes he's good to us, and something we didn't understand yesterday, he'll let us understand today, you know. Or sometime later. But it all works out. The old commentator, Adam Clark, I like what he said here. He said, this is the first account that we have of flesh or meat, breakfast, and flesh, meat, for supper. And as he said, this was the food appointed by the Lord for the sustaining of the prophet, we may naturally conjecture that it was the food of the people at large at that time. In other words, he said, and I read this with a couple more commentaries, he said that they say that that was the order of the day back in Bible time. Two meals a day is normally what they subsisted. And it was called breakfast and called supper. I like those two terms, don't you? Of course, breakfast is break it apart. Separate, break fast. You know, we slept all night, and our food that we consumed yesterday is digested. And we feel a little bit hungry when we get up, you know. And by 8, 9, 10 o'clock, if we haven't eaten, we're really feeling hungry. And that's just natural. So we take food. Don't necessarily have to take a whole lot, but just something to break that fast. We fasted all that time. 8 hours, 7, 8 hours, maybe 10 hours, 12 hours. That's the last time we eat. But we break that fast. And that's why we call it breakfast. And I like this term, supper. I know we've gotten proper in these days. We used to call what folks call today lunch, we call that dinner. And what they call dinner, we used to call that supper. Well, that's scriptural. That's the marriage supper of the Lamb, you know. It's coming the day when we'll sit down with our Lord Jesus Christ and we'll enjoy the marriage supper. The supper. Everything will be done. You know, we used to, that was a normality with most families. The families gathered together for the evening meal. Now, they'd been apart all day doing this, that, and the other. But now it's time to sit down together at supper time. At supper time. And to sup with one another. That has to do with communion also. Communicating with one another. Tony and I was talking about this recently. Folks don't communicate real good today. Got all this technology that they've gotten into. They're obsessed with it. A lot of them are obsessed with it. Tony said, you ever notice you go into a restaurant and there'll be a couple sitting over here and they're sitting there with their thumbs doing this, that, and the other. Looking down, not looking at one another, never saying a word to one another, just working their thumbs. I used to wonder what they're doing, but now I've learned out they call it, what do you call it, texting? Texting, that's what they're doing. They're typing out with their thumbs. Well, it's good for folks to sit down and talk. It's good for a family to sit down at the table and talk and discuss things. Talk to the children. Let the children talk to you. And see what the course of the day brought about. What they did. What they accomplished. And did they have any problems? Anything that major that's come up in your life you need to talk about? Nothing supersedes conversation. You understand what I'm saying? That's major. That's absolutely major. Need to learn to talk with one another. Now my wife's got into this other stuff. And I go down the road like a dummy, you know. Yeah. Never get to say a word. Because no, I'm not going there. She's got a pair of scissors over there, and she's cutting out coupons. down the road cutting out coupons, you know. Well, I appreciate that because she's saving us money, you know. But I'd still like to talk a little bit every now and then. I really would like to talk a little bit. That thing I'd like to, you know, like to discuss. It's good to talk, isn't it? Well, here's a fella spent a year just him and God. Reckon how much talking he did with God. He couldn't talk to those ravens. I mean, he couldn't even tell them thank you for what you dropped off today. Couldn't tell them that at all. Where'd you get this bread from? Who baked this bread? He couldn't converse with them, so he had to talk with God. And I'm sure that he thanked God every day, twice a day at least, twice a day, probably all day long. Had plenty of time on his hand and just worshiped the Lord for what the Lord had supplied for him. That's good conversation, isn't it? That's good conversation. But that was a normal thing, a natural thing back in those days, two meals a day. And here the prophet has bread and he has meat. Two meals, two square meals a day for his breakfast and for his supper. Two principal meals were in use. Now the ravens, think about the ravens here, bring a sufficiency in a short time for each meal, ready prepared. It was ready prepared. The bread made and baked, and the flesh either boiled, broiled, or roasted. Come three ways in that day. And that's the way that it was brought. And then he had water he drank from the brook. Do you notice that in the text there? Ravens brought him bread and flesh two times a day. And the bottom line was, and he drank from the brook. So what more could a man want? What more could a man ask for? Two square meals and water to drink. Water to drink. Ashley and I have got on this kick now about drinking water instead of tea. You know, I always love tea, sweet tea. But that sugar, they say, is not real good for you, so we're going to try to stay away from some of that. They say that's the quickest thing. It turns to fat. And so we just sort of stay away from the sweet tea and drink water. Of course, we're putting a little lemon in. I like that lemon. They say the lemon's a cleanser anyway, so I'll squeeze it out of lemon to put in our water. But we have that water with our meal. And so you really can't ask for any more. Two meals a day and water to drink, that's sufficient. That's sufficient. David said this. You know, this falls right into the context with so much of what we read in the Psalm. David, in that 37th Psalm, 25th verse, he said, I've been young. David's writing this in his old age. We know this. And he's writing out of experience, a lifetime of experience. I was young. Now I'm old. He said, yet have I not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed. And you know, the word seed there has to do directly and primarily with your children. Those children that came out of you and Nikki. That's your seed. And David's saying, I've been young, now I'm old. I've never seen the righteous man, the breadwinner, forsaken, nor your seed begging bread. They don't have to go out and beg for bread every day, do they? God takes care of you, doesn't he? He takes care of everything we have need of. That's our God. That's our supplying God. Though afflicted of God and persecuted by men, yet we're never forsaken. Never forsaken by our blessed God. Though poor and needy, sometimes we find ourselves. Not too much in these days, but there might come a time that we find ourselves fairly poor and somewhat in dire need. And often in necessary circumstances. Yet, God in his providence shows up at the nick of time for us. And just like he did with his prophet Elijah, he'll bring us our need, take care of our wants. Oh, my. What else could we ask for? We need nothing else. We have God. If we have God, we have all. We have all. All right, back to the delivery service here. The crows, the ravens. There's the delivery boys. They're bringing in the meat and the bread and the meat twice a day. You know, ravens and all the lower creatures are generally ruled by their own instincts, aren't they? They are. They look out for themselves. They think nobody's looking out for them. They cry for that food. They have a sense of the higher being, the higher power, but they don't have a knowledge of him, an intellectual apprehension of him like you and I do. But they have instincts. It's amazing the instincts that God has given these lower creatures. They're smart. I mean, they have a natural intelligence built in. They know when there's something to fear. Instantly, they know when there's something to fear. Something that's out of the ordinary. Something that shouldn't be there at a particular time. I've been laying that big old dove there for about 3 or 4 weeks now. I'm not getting out of the house to hunt the thing. I sit on my porch. But it's all around there. It comes in and out, you know, the yard there. And I sit there last night until it gets dark. I couldn't see down in the woods there where she comes out. I saw something move, Jason. It was something move. I thought it might have been a squirrel. Just barely could get a glimpse of him. So I sit there and finally got so dark I couldn't see it all to where the location was. So I sort of stood up. And when I stood up, I saw something flash, a big old white tail hopping back into the pine thicket there. She fooled me again. She just saw something there that was what shouldn't be there, in other words. And God gave that animal a sense and a knowledge of fear and what to fear. If something all of a sudden appears that's just not to be there, all they know to do is hightail it. Just get out of here. And that's what they do. Now, they get that from the Lord. He gave them that. He gives the lower creatures their instinct. He gives us a greater ability to know certain things and certain things to fear and certain things to be comfortable with. This is a higher knowledge. But thinking about these lower creatures and how that they are generally ruled by their own instincts. But here's an exception, isn't it? Here's an exception. Here, where God overrules their instinct. He does. He makes them do what normally they just won't do. It's not going to do it. And tells them and directs them and moves them to take that food over to his prophet. Every day for a year. Every day. Twice a day. To take that food to his prophet. We think about Israel. And they're somewhat apprehensive. You read in the book of Exodus over there that Moses is trying to prepare them after they've been delivered out of Egypt to get ready to possess the promised land, the land that God has promised them. But they get news. They send spies in there, and here come these spies, and they give them ten of them give a false report, you know, and strike fear in the hearts of most of the aged Israelites who came out of Egypt, and it tells them how boogerish it is over there, how dangerous it's going to be over there, and how impossible it's going to be. There's so many over there, and they're like giants. They said it's unusual looking people, tribes, tribe after tribe. I don't think we can go in there. Well, God gives them encouragement. And Moses tells them what God said. And he says, God says that he'll send hornets before you. Don't worry about it. Just go on in there, and he'll take care of getting those people out of the way, the Hittites, the Havites, the Kenites, and all those other ites in there. So we'll get rid of them with a, I'll just send my hornets in there. What about that? You believe that? You believe that God could rid a land with hornets? That little insect? Have you ever had a hornet to get after you? Huh? I mean, just one hornet. Just one hornet. I'll tell you right now, it'll put fear in you. And if you can move, you will move. And move in a hurry. I never will forget. When Britt was about, oh, he's younger than you two fellas. He's about, I guess he's about 6 or 7 years old. We lived over Douglasville there on Newton Circle. And a lot of hardwoods in there behind us. And hornets built low that year. And there's a big hornet's nest. Just about, 50 yards from the house there, up about that high. And I told Britt and Sam, I said, boy, there's a hornet's nest over there. Now, do not fool with that hornet's nest. Kids are so obedient, aren't they? I said, don't mess around with that hornet's nest. Well, I happened to be in the bedroom looking out the window. It was adjacent to the back of the house saying, and I heard somebody scream. I looked, here come Britt across that, through those woods, and I had a little old about a 3-foot fence around the house there, a board fence at that time, and he leaped that fence. and I saw that swarm of hornets behind him. And buddy, he made it to the house. He outran the hornets. I couldn't believe it. So he got in the house, he's scared to death. I said, son, what'd you do? He said, well, Dad, he said, I just wanted to see if there's hornets in that thing. He said, I threw a rock and hit it. And he said, they came out of there after me. I said, see there, I told you. I said, one is that and eat you up. But God said he could rid that land, the whole land, of all of those heathen tribes, just by sending the hornets in there. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. He directs everything. Everything. And one of the most incredible violations of animal nature is the case of Balaam and his ass. this is always a fun with me to read about that false prophet Balaam. He was dumb, wasn't he? He was. He thought he was brilliant, but he was dumb. He's going over there to curse Israel against what God has already revealed to him. If you do that, you're going to get in trouble. You're going to be in trouble. Well, he's offered money. You know how money talks. And he goes over to curse Israel. He's going to be paid off by Balak and another heathen king. And anyway, as he starts out, you remember the story. First of all, the old donkey, she just balks. She sees the angel of the Lord. She got more spiritual eyesight than the old prophet himself. She sees the angel of the Lord. Well, that's God there again, revealing to the donkey what man couldn't see. And so she just balks in the way. And Balaam gets upset with her. Starts flailing her with his staff. And so she moves a little further. And here the angel appears again. And they must be going through a corridor somewhere or another. Because she shies to one side and crushes old Balaam's leg up against that wall. And he curses her then. I don't know what he called her. But he cursed her. And he started beating her again with his staff. And anyway, he said, if I had a sword, I'd kill you. And all of a sudden, she starts talking. The ass starts talking. And listen to what she said here. She said, when she saw the angel of the Lord, she fell down under Balaam. And Balaam's anger was kindled. And he smote the ass with his staff. And the Lord opened the mouth of the ass, and she said to Balaam, You know, I wonder about this till I die, I guess. Didn't he figure out something here? Wonder if that donkey had talked to him before. Anyway, he said, "What have I done unto thee?" That's the ass talking. "What have I done unto thee that thou hast smitten me these three times?" And Balaam said to the ass, "Because thou hast mocked me. I would there were a sword in mine hand, for now I would kill thee." Now, the donkey, this the ass, that's what this the King James Version, the ass just tells the old prophet the truth. He's trying to tell the prophet, don't do what you're about to do. God has hindered you three times by me. He should have put all this together. You're not to go over there and curse his people. No, God's already made that clear. Those that curse his people shall be under the curse. Isn't that what it says? I'll curse. You know, folks, we're living in a day when folks are, many people across this globe are going to wake up to the very truth of that statement, that promise that God made to Abraham back in Genesis chapter 12. "I'll bless them that bless you and curse them that curse you." I was catching this on the news yesterday. The Jews, by the thousands, by the droves, are coming out of Europe and other portions of the world and going back to the Holy Land. Europe has turned anti-Semitic. And they're not wanted. The Jews are not wanted in Europe. Not at all. And they're making it very clear, we don't want you here. Not you. That's how he spelled it. Say his name. Benjamin, the prime minister. He's already put this news out to Jews all over the world. Come home. We welcome you. We'll take you in here. This is your nation. This is your homeland. And they're going back. But these nations and these leaders that's encouraging this anti-Semiticism, anti-Semitic attitudes toward the Jews are in trouble, I believe. I wouldn't do that. I would not do that at all. Because this thing, hey, it's coming down to a showdown. Now, again, it may be a lot closer on us than we think it is. There's going to be a showdown, and the showdown is going to be with God. It's God who's going to meet the enemy. It's God who's going to destroy the enemy. Now, I've done read enough in the Scriptures to see that that's the case. I think they're going to muster up four things over with about a 200 million man army and try to annihilate the Jews, try to get rid of them. Krauthammer said last night, he said, folks, he said, it's coming down to this. For the first time since the days of Jesus, the Jews have a state. They have a nation. They have a community. They're collecting together. And he said, Iran is going to try to do in 7 hours, they'll be able to do in 7 hours, what it took Hitler 7 years to try to accomplish, which he failed. He didn't accomplish it when he tried to annihilate the Jews. He said, but if they get that bomb, the first thing they're going to do is hit Israel. And they made that clear, hadn't they? Isn't that what they say they want to do? The first thing they want to do is annihilate Israel. They've been bragging about what they're going to do for years now. Well, I tell you who they're going to meet. If they go into the land after Israel, they're going to meet God. And he'll be worse than hornets. But that's coming about. Maybe sooner than we think. This thing may be drawing to a close, folks. And for us, thank God, you know. We worship the Lord, don't we? We know where our hope is. And so our hearts are not filled with fear. But here we have this case here with this unusual thing, this donkey talking to her master, and the master talking to her. One other thing right quick and we're through. One other thing, the battle for bread. You know, there's a mystery in the text that baffles all the wonders, really, of the bird world and those that study the bird world. Here's something that never got a whole lot of, didn't give a whole lot of thought until just going back over this thing again recently, the grain crop. You have to have grain, don't you, to make bread? Well, the grain crop had been cut off. I mean, they were already in the midst of the drought, deep into it. And by in a year's time, they're going to be deeper and deeper into it. No, nothing grown to make bread out of. So that's an amazing thing right here. The famine was in the land already. Already. And here in a cave by the brook Cherith sat the prophet of the Lord, Elijah, waiting for something to eat. Waiting for something to eat. He didn't have to go out and scavenge here and there to collect his food. God said, you stay put, and I'm going to send the ravens to feed you. They'll bring you 2 square meals a day, and you drink from a brook. You wonder why he did not go to the neighbors. There was no neighbors. There were no neighbors here to go to. So he just had to wait on God and trust the word that God gave him. You know, that's the hardest, most difficult thing for you and I to do. We say we believe, but have a hard time believing, don't we? And just to rest on the promises of God. And I just imagine Elijah came to his mind occasionally. God, even though God had told him, what if the ravens don't show up tomorrow? Where am I going to go? I don't have any neighbors to go to. Nobody out here. You see, God sent him to the most desolate part of that country over there. He sent him into a wilderness. No neighbors. Nothing near. No towns. No villages. There he is all by himself. Just him and the Lord. And somebody said, well, couldn't he pick berries? Well, you have to have water, don't you? Rain to make berries. And if it had been berries right before the rain was stopped, then they were dried up, but now, unedible. So here he is, he's just sitting, waiting on God, and trusting the Lord day in and day out, day in and day out. What if we was in a fix like that? Reckon we could do it? Yeah, you could. Yeah, you could. You'd rest on God's word. You'd rest on just one simple promise. That one I quoted to you a while ago out of Psalm 37, verse 25. You'd rest on what David said. He said that by experience. I've been young, now I'm old, yet I've never seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. Just rest right there. Sit on there. So here it is. Seated one morning at the mouth of his cave, I think the prophet looks up into the sky and, my soul, he looks into a pitiless heavens and he sees a flock of birds approaching. A flock of birds approaching. Now you wonder, well, there's other caves there. Why didn't these birds go to a different cave, a different location? No, they were directed right straight to this one cave where this old prophet was seated, looking up, waiting on God, and here come the birds with his food. What was he resting in? God said this. He said this to Elijah. He said, I have commanded the ravens to feed thee there where I put you, where I station you. Go there. You wait there, and the birds will come to you, and they'll come with your food. And you know, this story, as we think about it, is in the story that these wild winged creatures came to Elijah directly from God at God's command is an amazing thing. And again, we know this. This is amazing in the story, that the ravens did not allow Elijah to hoard up a surplus of food. They brought him a meal in the morning and a meal in the evening. And he had to wait for a meal the next day, in the morning, and in the evening. He couldn't store it up. There was no way. Didn't have enough to store up. Just had enough to eat. And this is going to be his life for 3.5 years. We'll follow him over to Zarephath in a little while, and we'll learn there that he holds up with a widow woman who has only one handful of meal. And that handful of meal fed them for a whole year. For a year. It's amazing, isn't it? Yep. And yet the meal barrel never wasted. There's always a handful when she went in there to get that handful to make a cake every day. And again, this story impresses us that relief came to the prophet with the most unexpected and with the most unseemingly possible conveyance. Just don't seem possible that these birds did what they did for a year. This doesn't. And we try to tell this folks out here, they don't believe that. Well, there's got to be some kind of explanation. You need a new translation. Surely you're missing something there, preacher. Yeah. No, you take this word on faith. You rest on it. As a child of God, you believe it because you are a child of God and God's put faith in your heart. Oh, William Carey, the father of modern missions, an Englishman, just before he left India after being burdened with the burden to go yonder to the foreign lands of a heathen and preach the gospel, was the first out of the chute. William Carey preached a farewell sermon. And this was the title of it. Expect great things and attempt great things from God. Expect great things and attempt great things for God. And he took his text from Isaiah 54, 2 and 3. Let me read it to you. God said to each and every one of us, and Carey took this to be literally to him, enlarge the place of thy tent, and let them stretch forth the curtains of thine habitations. Spare not, lengthen thy cords, and strengthen thy stakes. For thou shalt break forth on the right and on the left, and thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles, and make the desolate cities to be inhabited. He's talking about an end time awakening, folks. That's what Carey believed. Carey was what you call not a evolutionary postmillennial. There's a distinction there, and I try to tell fellows who label me a postmillennialist. I said, let me explain my doctrine. If you're gonna call me what you call me, he was a revolutionary postmillennialist. He believed that the gospel was going to bring somewhere out here a revolution that would encompass the whole globe. And there would be thousands upon thousands upon thousands turning to the Lord and coming to Christ and embracing Him in the doctrine of the gospel. So why do we keep on doing what we're doing? Because God is in absolute control of this thing. And this thing is not over until it's over. And again, I remind you, it's so amazing to me that such a small little number of people here are doing what you're doing. About every person here, when you do what you do, whether it be cleaning the church, whether it be joining and preparing a meal up here, whether it be giving in the offering, whatever you do, you're doing this little handful is doing, each person is doing about what 5 people normally would do. Or more. And I thought about a song, and Amber found it for us. And Lord willing, we'll sing it maybe. Little is much when God is in it. Little is much when God is in it. We read it all the way through the Scriptures. So let's continue to trust the Lord. And let's just wait at the mouth of the cave like Elijah did. Because the Lord's going to provide for us. He'll take care of us. He will not forsake us. All right. All right, we'll have time for prayer here now. Someone have a special prayer.